And we're holding on Mem Ches Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom. We talked about in the Mishnah about the fact that you can have the Kala, there can be a certain stage of Nisuin, even before, not like this, of course, you have the Kedushin. Meanwhile, after the Kedushin, she's still living at home in her parents' house. Eventually, there's Nisuin, she goes to live with her husband. There can be there can be where she's going together with the Shluchim of the husband, where there can be a certain point at that, we said once she's going with those shluchim exclusively and the father or his shluchim are not along with her, where there at that point she's considered to a certain extent already fully married, even though she hasn't yet actually gotten to where her husband is and they haven't had the actual chuppah. Tana, we learn it. By the way, what the definition of chuppah is, we've talked about earlier in the Masechta. In particular, it comes up in this connection where the Gemara is going to be talking about where she had gone into the chuppah, but there hadn't yet been be'ila, they hadn't yet had relations. And so this is one of the places where the Rishonim discuss what exactly the definition of chuppah is. The Rambam and a number of other Rishonim, for example, say that the chuppah is the yichud room. However, the Ran points out that that's a little hard to make fit with our Gemara over here, where we're going to talk about that Nichnasel Chuppah Vela Nivala and other places in our Masechta that talk about that. It's not necessarily, of course, that Be'ila has to take place in the Yichud room. It doesn't always. But the point is, how is there any possibility of considering her Besula after that, where they could have had relations during that time? So we talked about before that there are different other definitions that the Rishonim have of what Nichnasel Chuppah is. Among them, one explanation is, in fact, we had at the beginning of the second parak, we talked about the veil that the Kala wears, the Hinuma, it's called. So there's a possibility. So one possibility is that Yichud may be that when the Chassan puts the veil on her, the Badef. And then there's a couple of other definitions as well. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Masa ab l'shluchei abal v'zinsa. Suppose that, now, we talked about yesterday, then we had a machloikus between several Amoraim. Once she's given to the shluchei abal, and they're going to be escorting her the rest of the way until where the chosin is, what does that make as far as, in what sense at that point is she in the reshus of the husband? So we said it can be for many different purposes, except that if she's marrying a kohen, she can't yet eat truma. We said maybe even truma. We said maybe as far as that he can yaushin her. Maybe as far as at that point, if she were widowed or divorced, her ksuba would go down to 100. Now, another thing we know, there's a difference between a non-nesua and a nesua. We know there's the difference as far if she's mezame at that point, what the miss is. If she's a, we're talking about still where she's a naira over here. We're talking about she's not yet a begeras. So if she's a naira b'stula ma'irasa and she's mezana, then she gets skila. On the other hand, if she's not a naira anymore, or what's relevant for our gemara over here, if she's already a nesua, even though she's still physically a b'stula, but already nesuin of some form has taken place, then already if she's mezana at that point, then the missa would get downgraded to chen. So now we're going to talk about that. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Masa ab the shluchei abal, if the father gave her to the shluchim of the husband, who are going to escort her the rest of the way, and he's not going along, the zinsa, then at that point, if she's mezaneh, during that time, harezu b'chenek, then she gets chenek. So even though they haven't yet had the full nisurin, and she hasn't been together with her husband, nevertheless, already it gets downgraded to chenek, as if she's in the sewer. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili, where do we know that from? And the answer is, Amar Abi Bahama, Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says that when the Pasuk talks about the skila, about the Naira Ma'irasa getting skila, the expression is, Liznos Beis Aviyah, that she did wrong to be Mizana in her father's house. So what is that phrase adding? What is this Beis Aviyah adding? Prat L'shemasa Av L'shloche Abal, that comes to exclude the case where the father had given her to the shluchim of the husband. The Gemara says, why? How do you know it means that? Maybe it means, so later on, you get to the stage where she does meet her chosen, and they have the chuppah, however we define the chuppah, whether it means the yichud room, whether it means the badekin, whether another possibility that Rishonim bring is it means what we think of as the chuppah, whatever, the four poles and the canopy. Anyway, so how do we know? Maybe the pasuk is implying that once they have that, even before Nivala, then she's already considered in the Nesua, and therefore it goes from Skiva to Chenek. But maybe when she's with the husband's Shluchim, that we're not yet at that stage, maybe she's still getting Skiva. Omar Rava, so Rava answers, can't be. Omar Li Ami, Ami, the Pashto is the same, Rav Ami Bahama, said to me, no, because Chuppah behed Yipsiva. Because as far as Chuppah, you have a different pasuk that says it explicitly. Well, not explicitly. It doesn't say the word chuppah in the pasuk, but in other words, we can easily derive from the pasuk that there's a separate thing that it talks about that once there's chuppah, then she's considered an asua for this purpose. And therefore, if we have another phrase in the pasuk, lizner space avia, then it must mean something else. Namely, the pasuk begins, ki yi naira b'sula ma'irasa la'ish, that if she's a naira and she's a b'sula and she's ma'iresis to a man, and the Brisa, and we know we have a Brisa that says, Naira v'loy begeres, each of those is meant as a mute, as opposed to something else. She's a Naira, but meaning not if she's a begeres. If she's a begeres, then she's not getting skila, but rather chenek. Besula v'loy ba'ula, the same thing. Besula means only if she's a besula, not if she's a ba'ula. And ma'irasa v'loy nesua, the third one. Ma'irasa means as opposed to if she's nesua. If any of those are true, if she's a begeres, or she's a be'ula, or she's a nesua, then she's getting chenek rather than skila. Now, says Rava, my nesua. So you have to ask, what does the word nesua mean? What would be the miut from ma'irasa that we're saying nesua? Ilema nesua mamash, do you mean the regular definition of nesua, meaning that there had been chuppah and be'ila? Hainu besula. Then that's exactly the same thing as the previous mute. Once we're saying that the rule of skila applies only if she's a besula, not a ba'ula, automatically, therefore, so okay, if there was nichnas of a chuppah, the nivala, then she's not a besula anymore, period. Ela lav she nichnas of a chuppah v'la nivala. Evidently then, the mute from ma'irasa v'la nesua must be telling us about where there was chuppah, but not yet be'ila. So physically, she's still a basula. Nevertheless, the chuppah has already taken place, and therefore, the pasuk is memayit and saying that she doesn't get skila anymore. So now, if we have the other phrase in the pasuk, lizner space avia, then it can't mean to exclude the case of chuppah because we already have that excluded by the word ma'irasa. Therefore, of necessity, it must be talking about this case of shluchei habaal. And that shows, therefore, that bears out what the Braisa is saying, that in that case already she's only getting chenek. So in other words, so it's not only if nichnas, so first, if nichnas of a chuppah of a nivala, no question about it. She's getting chenek rather than skila. Even if it was nichnas of a chuppah, but there wasn't yet be'ila, same thing. And now the Braisa is saying, even if there was neither of the above, but there was already masra av, the shluchei habaal, she's already traveling with the shluchim of the husband, and she's already out of her father's reshus, in that neither her father nor any of his shluchim are still accompanying them, then at that point she gets downgraded to chenek instead of skila, if she's mezana at that point. So the Gemara asks, now according to Rashi, this next question is not really going to be a continuation of the previous discussion. It's still on the same topic, but the Gemara is going to be asking sort of a side thing. So ve'ema, so maybe you should say, heicha da hadril, ve'enosha hadril milsa kamaisa. Maybe though, based on all of this, you should say, now like this, let's refer back to the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah that once she's going with the shluchei habaal and the shluchei ha'ah and the father of his shluchim are not with her anymore, at that point she's out of the reshus of her father and is in the reshus of her husband. So now the question is, ve'ema, maybe we should say, heicha da hadra l'vein nosha, if eventually she returns to her father's house, hadra l'milsa kamaisa, then maybe she should go back to the original status. Meaning, So like this, the Mishnah had said that once she's given to Shluchei HaBaal, then that's it. She's in the Rishus of the Baal, implying no matter what happens afterwards, she's already out of the Rishus of the father. So now the question is, if we're saying that we're learning only from the words Beis Aviyah, then maybe if she is back in Beis Aviyah, so let's say, so she went with Shluchei HaBaal, then something happened on the way, her husband divorced her, or her chosin, that is, they haven't yet done the nisuin, but anyway, her chosin divorced her, or died, or whatever, so she's returning back home. Maybe we should say, in that case, then, she resumes the status of being an arusa in her father's house. So in particular, if she's mezane at that point, then it should be skila rather than chen. And our Mishnah doesn't seem to be implying that. So why not? So in other words, the question is not, according to Rashi, a continuation of how do we know what the din of Braisa was saying, but rather it's a more general question. How do we know that after she's gone with Shluchei HaBaal, then it's irrevocable, and the fact that later on she gets divorced or widowed doesn't change things, even though she's returning to live at home? Tosfos discusses, and so does several other Rishonim, that maybe it is a continuation of the question. That we just said we know Mosra Av the Shluchei HaBaal because we have an extra phrase in the pasuk Lizmei Space Aviyah. But maybe you could say that, so the question the Gemara is asking, according to Tosfos, is that maybe both that and the miut from the word ma'urasa are both talking about nichnas al-chuppah. And the point would be, if you only had one of them, then you wouldn't know that the same din applies if before the chuppah, after the mesira of the Shluchei HaBaal, she was widowed or divorced. So maybe you need both psukim, just both to teach us about the same thing, that even though nichnas alachupa v'lo nivala, but not anything about, and the point is that if nichnas alachupa, then if her husband dies or divorces her, then she goes back to be, then we would say she doesn't go back to her original status, she remains considered a nesua, and the misah, if she's mezana, would be chenet, but the point is, we'd need both of them in order that you shouldn't mistakenly think that if she returns back home having been widowed or divorced, then it's different. So according to that, both those psukim would be needed for that, and you wouldn't have anything left for Shluchei HaBaal. So how do you know not? And the answer is, Amar Rava, Hahu Kva Poska Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel. The answer is, you already have a clear braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel to say that that's not the case. Once she was given to the Shluchei HaBaal, who are going to accompany her, then at that point, then it's irrevocable. She remains in that status as a nesua forever, and she never goes back to being a naira ma'irasa. We know that from Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel. Therefore, so according to Rashi, that answers the question. There's no way of going back. And according to Tosfos, the point is that once we have that, then we know that fact already. Therefore, we don't need two psukim about nichnas alachupa v'lo nivala, and therefore one of them is telling us the underlying idea that once she's given to Shluchei HaBaal, then she's considered a nesua. So in other words, according to Tosfos, we'd have three psukim, one teaching us about, well, according to everybody, we have three psukim, but the idea is, in other words, one would be telling us that mesira to the Shluchei HaBaal is effective. Another one would be telling us, which is what we're going to learn now from Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, that is irrevocable. And once that's done, then she's in the Suah and never goes back to being a Naira Ma'irasa. And the third one would be telling us from the word Ma'irasa, that if there's no Mesira to the Shluchei HaBaal in the first place, if there's no Shluchim involved, then she's considered in the Suah once she goes into the Chuppah. So, what is Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel? The Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, the pasuk says, in connection with Hafaras Nedarim, in connection with, you have the whole part in Parshas Matos, where a father and afterwards a husband can be mefer, can cancel the wife's Nedarim. The pasuk says, V'neder amonu grusha, the neder of a widow or a divorcee, koila she'osra amnafsha, yokum aleha, whatever she asked on herself will remain standing on her, meaning it's going to be a valid neder, and there's no one who can revoke it for her. She can go to Beis Din and be matter neder, of course, but it's not the psukim are not dealing with that. Psukim are dealing with if anybody has the right to veto her neder, and the answer is that at this point, no. Now, says Tanad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, Matam Adloimar. What does the pasuk need to tell us that for? Who is there available? At this point, when she's a widow or she's divorced, she's already out of the rishus of her father, so her father can't veto her neder. She's out of the rishus of her husband, so he can't either. So it's obvious that there's nobody that can be made for her neder. Why do we need a pasuk to tell us that? Ela. So says Tana Jereb Shmuel, the pasuk is coming to tell us like this. Suppose that the father had given her to the shluchim of the husband, who are going to accompany her to her chassan's hometown. Or we said yesterday, you can even have shluchim of the father who are accompanying her, and then on the way they meet up with the shluchim of the husband, and they transfer her to them. Now, when it's Amal of Aderach, now on the road, she gets widowed or she gets divorced. So now the question would be, what do we consider? In what status do we consider her right now? Based avia shalzu, a based baila shalzu. Do we consider, is she still considered to be in her father's house, or is she considered to be in her husband's house? If we said she's in her father's house, means that her father would have the ability to cancel her neder, if she makes any nedarim at that point. If we consider her to be in her husband's house, then what would it be? Her husband is already, her husband already, or, the point is, Rashi says, in other words, like this. Suppose that she had gotten widowed from the Erusin. Suppose there had been Erusin, then during that year or whatever it is that there usually is between the Erusin and the Nisuin, she had been widowed or divorced, and then the din is, if she's still at Naira, then she goes back home and she returns to her original status in the sense that her father now has the ability again to be made for her Nidorin. So what happens is that originally living at home, her father had the ability, before the Erusin, her father had the exclusive rights to cancel her Nidorin. Now, as an Arusa, it's the father and the Chosin together that have that right. Now, if her chosin passes away or divorces her during the erusin, then it goes back to the father. So now, what we're saying is that in this case over here, when she was given over to shluchei habaal, then that's different. So now the pasuk is without the pasuk, we wouldn't know, is she still considered to be in her father's house at this point, and her father regains the exclusive right to cancel her nedarim, or is she in her husband's house and therefore her husband would have that right, except that her husband isn't her husband anymore because he died or divorced her. So therefore, the pasuk is telling you that she's neither. She's not back in her father's house in terms of her father's nedarim, and she's not in, and her chosin is out of the picture. So kiven she yotza shah achas mirshus ahav, once she's been even for a short time out of her father's house, meaning from her father's rishus rather, because she's together with the chosin's shluchim, shuv eni yachal lahafer, then the father can no longer be made for his daughter's nedarim. So therefore, we see clearly from that braisa that once she was given to shluchei habaal and they're going to be accompanying her, then at that point she's forever out of the rishus of her father. And even if at that point she's widowed or divorced, then she's not going back to that rishus. Therefore, that automatically tells us that in that case also, if she's mizana at that point, then it would be chenek rather than skila. And it tells us, in other words, that this whole thing is irrevocable, as we were saying at the top of the Amud, even if she does return to her father's house, she may physically be there, but she's not considered to be in his rishus anymore. This is all before Chuppah, right? This is after Masira l'shluchei habaal, exactly. So therefore, so Rava says, so we already know from that braisa that once she's given to shluchei habaal, then that's irrevocable. Therefore, we don't need that. Therefore, according to Rashi, we started with an independent question. The Mishnah tells us once she's given to shluchei habaal, then that's it. How does the Mishnah know? And Rava says that's why. That's how we know. According to Tosfos, the question and the answer was, how do we know that the two psukim we said before of Lizna's based avia and Ma'irasa, one is talking about Shluchei Abal and the other one is talking about Chuppah, maybe both of them are needed to tell us about Chuppah in order that we shouldn't misunderstand. And Rava says, no, once we have Tanna Dei Rabbi Shmuel that tells us that Shluchei Abal is irrevocable, then we already know that the other two Pesukim are talking, one tells us the basic concept that Shluchei Abal changes anything anyway and makes it that her Misa is not Skila anymore, but Chenek, and the other one, therefore, is available to teach us about Chuppah where there were no Shluchei Abal. So in short, again, give me 1 second. Let me just finish the thought over here. So therefore, the point is that the bottom line is what the Braisa was saying. Whether she goes into the Chuppah, whether there's no Shluchei Abal, she and her Chassan are in the same city. Once she goes into the Chuppah, even before Be'ilah, then she's considered an Asua. And furthermore, not only Chuppah, but even if there was Mesira, the Shluchei Abal, then at that point, it's also considered that she's in the Suah. What were you going to say?
What happens when she's taken by the Shluchei Abal and then they get killed?
They get killed, so then it doesn't matter. I mean, once she was given to the Shluchei Abal, the point is that at this point, she's in the Suah. If they get killed on the way, she's going to be in great danger, but I guess either she continues going on or she returns back home. But the point is, it doesn't matter. At that point, we're saying it doesn't matter where she's physically located after that. She's considered an Asua at that point, and at that point, then her Misa is no longer Skila. It's Chenek if she were to be Mizana. And we talked about yesterday the various other things, what would and wouldn't apply yet in terms of the usual things that take effect after Nisuin. Which ones of those would and wouldn't take effect yet? We had the different opinions of the Amiroyim that we discussed yesterday. But the fact that the Shluchei Abal are no longer alive is neither here nor there. Either practically speaking, she'll have to decide for herself, can I continue the journey on my own and meet my chosen, or should I better go back home and wait for somebody else to come and accompany me? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says, we had the Braisa that we started today's daf with at the bottom of Memches Amud Beis. So we showed how the Braisa knows the din. Amar Rav Papa afanan nami tanema. So Rav Papa says, in fact, you can show that this Braisa is correct lahalacha because we find a Mishnah that expresses the same point. The Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, habam naira mayrosa. So if a man is mizana with a naira mayrosa, then he and she, if it was willingly, are not chayav skila agite naira b'sula ma'irasa v'hi b'veis avia, unless all four things are true. She's a naira of b'sula ma'irasa and she's in her father's house. So now let's figure, what is the Mishnah excluding with each of these phrases? B'shlema naira means v'loi begeres. The word naira comes to exclude if she's a begeres, where then it's chenek rather than skila. B'sula v'loi ba'ula, same thing. Ma'irasa v'loi nesua. But we have to ask, what would the fourth expression in the mission of be coming to exclude? Presumably, it would have to be excluding the case where the father gave her to the shluchim of the husband. And the point is, so even though everything else is still true, she is still a naira, she is still a basura, she is only ma'irosa because they haven't had the chuppah yet. Nevertheless, she's already not in b'veisavia because she's been given to the shluchei abal and the father and his shluchim are no longer with her. And the Mishnah is implying by that already at that point she's only getting chenek rather than skila. So the fact that the Mishnah says that supports what the Braisa was saying and shows that what the Braisa is saying is correct and is accepted by Allah. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, we have another Mishnah also in Sanhedrin that bears this out. The Mishnah that Rav Papa brought was in connection with Skila, and then we have another Mishnah later on in Sanhedrin that talks about who's Chayiv Chenek, and it says, a Baal Ishish, a man is Mizana with a married woman, Kivin Shenichnas of Rishus Abaal Nisuin, and that means an Ishish, once she entered the Rishus of her husband as far as marriage, even though they haven't yet had relations, so if anybody has relations, anybody else other than her husband has relations with her, then he gets chenek. So the Mishnah is more clearly saying that she just went into the shrus of the husband. It didn't say nichnas alachupah. Therefore, shmamina, that also shows that we're talking about Shluchei Abal, and once she's with Shluchei Abal, she's considered to be in the reshus of the husband, even though the chuppah has not taken place yet. Okay, so all of that shows that what the Braisa had said is correct and is accepted by halacha. So now, we talked about in the previous Mishnah, we said that what the father gets from his daughter, and we talked about what the father gets from his daughter. We said he's entitled, while she's a Tana or a Naira, to her Kiddushin, to control over her Kiddushin and to the money of it. He gets her Mitzia and her Maisia Deha and so forth. So our Mishnah continues, Ha'av Eine Chayev B'Mizonis Bitei. While the father is alive, he's not obligated to support his daughter. She can support herself. So once he passes away, then it's one of the Tnoi Ksuba, which we'll discuss later on in the Masechta, that the daughters will be supported until they get married. It's the Rabbanim, like most of the Tanoic Sukkah, right? But while he's alive, that takana is not yet in effect, and therefore he's not obligated to support her. One thing is, the Pnei Yeshua does point out, now in the previous Mishnah we said that the father is entitled to Maisir, so sit below six and above six, we're going to talk about in the Gemara, but so we'll see what age we're talking about over here. But at one point, the Pnei Yeshua makes a point. You know, we learned in the previous Mishnah the father is entitled to the Maisir Deha of his daughter. Now, he says, if the father is going to keep her Maisir Deha, no question he has to support her. I mean, even for example, a person is able to say, the halacha is a person can say to his eved knani, I say me the ain zanach, but he certainly can't say that to an eved ivri. He can't say, you have to work for me, but I'm not obligated to support you. So the same thing over here. I mean, there's no way the father has the ability to say, you have to give me your Maisir Deha, and I'm not going to support you in return. If he's taking her Maisir Deha, he's obligated to support her. What we're saying is that he doesn't want to take her Maisir Deha, or let's say she doesn't have any Maisir Deha, then he's not technically obligated to support her. So why is that? Zem Nedresh Dorish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Fnechachamim B'Kerem B'Yavne. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said this drosha in front of the Chachamim in the Kerem B'Yavne. Kerem B'Yavne is the yeshiva over there in Yavne. We know after the Churban, you have Rabbi Yechiman Zakei says to Asfas Yonis shortly before the Churban, actually, whatever, Ken L'Yavne V'Chachamel, let me reestablish the Sanhedrin and the yeshiva in Yavne, and he was granted permission, and they remained there for some years. So during that time, when they were in Yavne, as we know happened, the whole story with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah being appointed as the new Nasi to replace Rabbi Gamliel. So Rashi says this is on the day that they appointed him Nasi, he gave the following drasha. Why is it called Kerem B'Yavne? So Rashi says because the Chachamim were sitting in rows like the vines in a vineyard. The Rambam brings that reason in Pirush HaMishnayos and brings another reason as well. In general, in many places in Tanakh, the Jewish people are compared to a vineyard, and the Chachamim, who are the representatives of all the Jewish people, therefore can also be called a vineyard. Anyway, so he gave the following drasha. We said in the Ksuba we have two phrases. Habonim Yushu Babonis Yizonu. The boys are going to Yaushin, and the girls are going to get Mizonis. Now, the Yaushining, what we're talking about primarily is what we're going to learn later on in this parak about the concept of Ksubas Benin Dichrin. The Chachamim made a takana that like this. So the woman is entitled to a ksuba, 200 if she was a besula when she got married, 100 otherwise. Now, if her husband dies before her or divorces her, then she collects that ksuba. Fine. What happens if she dies first? So the Chachamim made a takana called ksubas benin dichrin that her boy, the boys that she has with him, are going to yarshin that ksuba, and then they split up the rest of the estate. In other words, imagine that the guy had two wives. Imagine the guy had two wives, and one of them passed away while he was alive. Then the children, the sons of that wife, are going to yarshin an amount equal to their mother's ksuba, and then the rest of the estate they split with their half brothers. So we'll learn about the details of that later on in our parak. But anyway, the point is that so you have these two takonas, the takona of ksubas benin dichrin, and another tnai ksuba, which is that the daughters are to be supported until they get married. Or until they become a begeres, or until they become man. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says the fact that those two things are in the ksuba back to back teaches us that there's a similarity. Ma habonim enin yoshin el la'acham misasav. When do the sons inherit the ksubas benin dichrin? Only after the father dies. So in other words, their mother died. It doesn't mean that right at that moment they yoshin their mother's ksuba. It means that it's pending. Eventually, when their father dies and it comes time to split up the estate, they have earmarked for them first the amount that was going to be their mother's ksuba, and then the rest of it is split among all the yoshim. That's halacha. Yeah, we'll talk about that later on in Pesach. Nowadays, we don't usually find that done, but we'll talk about it then when we get to it. Bez Hashem and Daf and Beis and Gimel, we'll deal with it. Anyway, so he says, Af habonis en nizonis el acham misavien. The same way, it's tnai ksuba that the daughters have to be supported only takes effect after the father dies. So when the father is alive, then he's not required to support them yet. So the Gemara starts off. The mizonis bito yehuda ene chayev. Now we're saying that he's not chayev in to support his daughters. Haba mizonis benoy chayev. But the implication seems to be that the father is required to support his sons even while he's alive. And bito nami choyvahu deleka. And even as far as the daughters, it sounds like we're saying that he's not required to hal mitzvah ita. It sounds like there would be a mitzvah, would be a good thing for him to do. So the question is, if we understand the Mishnah that way, mani masnisin, then who is the Mishnah going like? Lord of Meir, Lord of Yehuda, Lord of Yechim and Beretta. It doesn't seem to be like any of three Amudoyim who address this topic. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, mitzvah lozunas abonis kavachoyim alabonim da'aski batoira divir a Meir. Reb Meir says it's a mitzvah, meaning not a choyva, it's not an absolute obligation, but it is a mitzvah, it is something preferable for the father to support his daughters, and how much more so for the sons, since the sons learn Torah. Divir a Meir, so that's what Reb Meir says. So now, our Mishnah that's saying that he's not, that seems to be implying that he's required to support his sons and not required to support his daughters, that wouldn't fit a point to Reb Meir. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's a mitzvah, but not a choiva, to support the sons, but how much more so the daughters, because of zilusa, because of the embarrassment that they would have to go around and beg for tzedakah. In fact, Mephoshim Bung over here is something that the Rishami says, that it's not just the humiliation of having to go and collect tzedakah, they might even go, the Tirus Ra, they might even decide, you know what, I have another way as a woman to make money, and we don't want that. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no difference between the sons and the daughters. Both of them, it's a mitzvah, but not a choiva, whereas our Mishnah seems to be implying that it's a choiva to support the sons. And Rabbi Yechon ben Berakha, a choiva lozinus habonis v'acham misravin. Rabbi Yechon ben Berakha says it's a requirement that to support the daughters after their father dies because of the tanai ksuba. Avo b'chayavin elu v'elu einin nizonin. But during the lifetime of the father, neither one of them is entitled to mizonis, meaning even on the level of mitzvah. So now the question is, mani masnisin. So who would our Mishnah be following? If we're saying that our Mishnah seems to be implying that the sons he's required to support, but the daughters he's not. So e Reb Meir ha'am abonim mitzvah. Reb Meir says that it's a mitzvah, but not a choiva to support the sons. E Reb Yehuda ha'am abonim nami mitzvah. Reb Yehuda also says that supporting the boys is a mitzvah rather than a chloiva. And E Rabbi Yechon ben Berakha after the mitzvah nami leka. And Rabbi Yechon ben Berakha would say it's not even a mitzvah. It's not even, if he wants to on his own, then fine. But there's no particular inyan in him doing it. So our mission doesn't seem to fit according to anything. And the answer is, Ibois Emer of Meir, Ibois Emer of Yehuda, Ibois Emer of Yechon ben Berakha. The answer is on the contrary. Our Mishnah could go according to any of the three of them. First, you can say that our Mishnah goes like Reb Meir. So Reb Meir is saying like this. The father is not chayav, in other words, Beis Din is not going to force him to support his daughter. And the same thing would apply as far as his son, implying however, there's no chayva, but the implication is that there is a mitzvah to support his daughter, and Reb Meir goes on to say how much more so for sons since they learned Torah. In other words, the point is, Reb Meir is considering the sons more important than the daughters because the sons learned Torah. So if he had said the expression, Eine Chayev, Bimizonis Benoi, then you would think maybe he's not Chayev in the sons, but there is a mitzvah, but for the daughters, maybe there's not even a mitzvah. So instead, he puts it in terms of Eine Chayev, the mizonis bitoy, to imply that there is a mitzvah, and then in that case, then the Kavah Chomer tells us the same thing for the sons. So that doesn't contradict our Mishnah. And that's what the Gemara continues. The fact that Reb Meir starts by mentioning his daughter, or the fact that our Mishnah says his daughter, the point of the Chiddush pshat that is. That's the bitoy choy v'hu deleka ha-mitzvah. Even when it comes to the daughter, where, after all, she's not Osik Batora, and therefore you should have less of an obligation, there's no choyva, but even with her, there is a mitzvah. So our Mishnah could work according to the mayor. Next, the very same of Yehuda. You could also say that the Mishnah goes according to the Yehuda. So it's saying, Ha'av ene chayev b'mizonis bitoy b'choshek en levnoi. So the father is not chayev to support his daughter. How much more so he's not chayev to support his son. Because after all, Rabbi Yehuda had not said this. Rabbi Yehuda had said the other way around. Rabbi Yehuda had taken the Kavachomer the other way around. Rabbi Meir had said that the sons, in a way, are more important because they learn Torah. Rabbi Yehuda had pointed out that in a way the daughters are more important because of Zilusa. So now, when our Mishnah is saying that he's not chayev in the mizonis of his daughter, how much more so he's not chayev in the mizonis of his sons, because after all, there's no Zilusa for them, or there's less Zilusa for them. So the implication is that there is a mitzvah to support the sons. But Rabbi Yehuda is not dealing with the matter of Yehuda is not dealing with the matter of learning or not, but he's saying there may not be a choiva for either one of them, but there is a mitzvah. But kavachomer levonis, and how much more so since the daughter, so there is, the daughters need it more than the sons because of zivosa. So if we're saying that there's a mitzvah for the sons, how much more so that for the daughters there's a mitzvah, just not a choiva. So the reason why our Mishnah focuses on the daughter, then the point would be that even with the daughter, there's no choiva. So essentially, so far, it comes out that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are both saying the same thing. They're just coming at it from different angles. So some approach and talk about the nachamina between them would be, let's say there's not enough money to support both the sons and the daughters. Which one takes precedence? Depends which one you consider more important versus less important. Another nachamina would be, let's say the sons aren't learning Torah. Do they have any advantage over their sisters? If appointed a mayor, the whole reason for their advantage is because they learn Torah. Well, if they don't learn Torah, then maybe appointed a mayor, they don't have that advantage. Okay. And the very same of Yechan ben Breka. Another possibility is our Mishnah could work like Rabbi Yechan ben Breka. So the Mishnah is saying, he's not chayev to support his daughter. The same thing applies to the son. And the Mishnah would be implying, according to Rabbi Yechan ben Breka, really, it's not just that there's no choyva. Unlike with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, where we said the Mishnah is saying he's not required to, implying that there is a mitzvah, would be a good thing for him too. And the point is, we're going to say further down on the Amud, if there's a mitzvah, for example, then Beis Din should convince him to do it. They may not be able to force him, but at least they should try to convince him to. If we say that there's chayva, it means they'd actually have to force him, and if according to Rabbi Yechon ben Breka, there's not even a mitzvah, it means they wouldn't even try to talk him into it. They would just leave well enough alone. So Rabbi Yechon ben Breka is saying there's no mitzvah here, but I the bonus, la'acha mitzvah, the chayva, but just because after the father passes away, then he has a chayva, then he has, there's an absolute obligation on the estate for the daughters to be supported, because that is one of the tnoik suba. So therefore the Mishnah begins by saying that he's not chayev while he's alive, not to imply he's not chayev, but it's at the level of mitzvah, but rather according to Rabbi Yechon ben Breka, it's not even at the level of mitzvah. So according to him, as long as the father is alive, there's nothing at all, not a chiyuv and not even a mitzvah. But after the father dies, then you have tnoi ksuva requires that at that point the daughters be supported. So all of this is talking about, as we're now going to say in the Gemara, is when they're above 6 years old. So up to 6 years old, he does have to support them. Tosfos points out, we're going to have at the end of the next parak, we're going to discuss that, because kids up to six are generally with their mother. So the same way as he has to support the mother, then they're supporting the child goes along with it. And that, by the way, applies even if they're divorced, then also you have that concept. So here we're talking about, in our Mishnah, we're talking about when they're above six. So now continues the Gemara. Amar of Ila, Amar of Shlokish, Mishrim of Yehuda Bar Hanina, but Usha Hiskil. The Chachamim made a takana in the city of Usha. Now the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that in the decades after the Churban, after Churban Bayis Sheni, that is, the Sanhedrin moved from place to place. Even while the Beis Hamikdash was standing, they moved from Lushkas Hagozis to Chanuyas, and from Chanuyas to Yerushalayim, because of the whole thing, the Gemara tells us that there were Rotzchim more prevalent, and the Chachamim figure. We can't judge all of them, and therefore let's just move from Lishkas Agazis in order that now we don't have to be damned in a Farshis anymore. But after the Churban, then the Gemara goes on to say, they moved to Yavne, and then from Yavne they moved to Usha, and then for a while they moved back to Yavne and so forth, and it goes through the whole Seder over there, how over a period of 100 and some years, how they moved from one place to another.
After the whole Churban, they're still up somewhere else.
No. So after the Churban, there may or may not have been Rotskin, but after the Churban, only when they're sitting in the Lishkas Agazis can they judge in a Fashas. After the Churban, they can't sit in the Lishkas Agazis anyway. But even during the last 40 years of the second Beis Mikdash, because there were Rotskin more and more common than the Chachamim figure, we can't get all of them, so therefore let's better move, and that way we don't have to judge in a Fashas at all. So Tosfos mentions in some places that maybe once in a while, on a temporary basis for an extreme case, they return to the Lishkas Agazis and judge. But ordinarily they figured we're going to have to leave it in the Edish's hands. One thing is, I mean, you have to realize a lot of the Rotskim during that period were very politically connected. So practically speaking, if you tried to get them, then they'd be putting everybody in danger. Anyway. But after the Churban, the point is, they can't sit in the Lishkas Agazis anymore anyway, the Smithish is destroyed. So then they were moving from place to place as different times when the Romans persecuted them and forced them out of one place, and they would move to another, and they'd be there quietly for a while, and eventually they'd have to move. So one of the places where they were, was a city in the Galil called Usha. Actually, the Gemara there in Rosh Hashanah mentions they were there twice. They went to Yavne after the Churban, then they moved at one point to Usha, then they moved back to Yavne, and then back to Usha. A Doris Rishonim, a Sefer on Jewish history, explains basically that the Romans didn't particularly like the idea of them being in Yavne. Okay, Aspasianus had given permission, but eventually the Romans realized that started not liking the idea, and therefore they persecuted them and forced them out of there. So if they're in the Galil, it's further away from Yerushalayim, they figured that's less of an issue, so the Chachamim could find some respite over there. Eventually then, when things got better, then they moved back to Yavne, and then when things got worse, then they had to move to Usha. Anyway, so when the Sanhedrin was in Usha, they made the following takon. A man is required to support his children, his sons and his daughters, when they're little, meaning Rashi says until they develop shtei sides. So even past the age of six. So till now we've been talking about that he's required to up to six. Now we're saying takonas Usha is he's required to support them at an age above that as well. Till they're 12 or 13, yeah, then they can go get a job, yeah. I saw, by the way, somebody says a word on this, that it was also meant as like a pointed hint to the Eibishter. You know, we're like children, Shigolum al Shulchan Aviyem, because we've been exiled from your table at the Beis Mikdash, but still, the Eibishter continue to support us because we're canon. Let's keep caught in the actors. Anyway, so, Iboyelahu, so now the question becomes, is the halacha like Rav Ila, that takana is in fact in effect, or not? Or would we say that takana was never voted on and was never decided on, or maybe we would say it creates a mitzvah but not a chayva? So what is it? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof. Ki haba osu l'kamei de Rav Yehuda. When such a case was brought to Rav Yehuda, you had a case where a man didn't want to support his children after they were 6 years old. Omalahu. So Rav Yehuda answered them with a popular expression, Yorud Yolda, the Yorud gives birth, the Yorud is some kind of animal, we'll talk about in a second, the Abnei Masa Shadia. And throws its children onto the people of the city to take care of. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, this guy is acting cruel like a yorud. So a yorud, Rashi translates as tanim, which is an animal, which is a creature mentioned in a number of places in Tanakh. From some places, it seems, in all the places where it's mentioned, the two characteristics of it are that it has a very mournful cry and that it's very cruel to its children. So, for example, in Megillas Eicha, we have the expression, Gam Tanim Choltzu Shad, that even the Tanim, which is cruel to its children, will still stick out its breast for them to nurse. The Medrash actually says on that the Tanim, the Eidishta made it, that it has like a covering over its face, that when its babies are young, it doesn't see them and it allows them to nurse. If it were to see them, it would eat them. So the Tanim is some kind of cruel creature. So based on that it has breasts and it nurses. No, so that's the word. So one possibility, no, we're not talking about Tanninim Abdullah, that's something else. So one possibility is this creature is what's called in English a jackal. So it's an animal in the same family as dogs and wolves and whatever. So that's one possibility. If there are some places in Shas where Rashi defines it as some kind of bird, and we find, in fact, there are places in Pesukim where it mentions it in connection with Bnos Yana, which are ostriches. So the implication would be that it's some kind of bird that tends to hang out with ostriches. So maybe what it is maybe there are actually two different creatures that bear that name. Whatever the case, the Aramaic word for the creature is Yod. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying, look at this guy. He's acting as cruel as a yorud to his children, that just like the yorud bears its children and then like wants having nothing to do with them, the same way this guy is acting like the yorud and he's throwing his children on the tzibur to take care of them. The point being that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying, well, we're the beis din, let's force him to do what he needs to do. He's just saying we need to put pressure on him. That shows that maybe the takonas usha does not apply. Otherwise, he would be required to. And he had also the Kamezer of Chista. Similarly, when such a case was brought to Rav Chista, Amalahu, he told the people, Kofulei Asisa B'tzibura, take a mortar, which is a large container that they use for grinding things, turn it upside down in the tzibur, in the marketplace, the Leikum, and let him stand the Lema and make the following announcement. Over Boi Bunny, even the raven looks after its children. Bahu Gabra like Boi Bunny, and that person does not want to look after his children. So again, like we put social pressure on him, but we don't force him to do the right thing. So who goes on it? So Rashi brings two explanations. One is that we make the man himself, he himself, who doesn't want to support his children, based and makes him stand up on this upside down mortar and make this announcement about that I myself am worse than the Erev. And that way, maybe the point is that the guy will be humiliated enough that he'll say, you know what, I'll go ahead, I'll do it. The other possibility, Rashi says, is we send the Shliach Tzibur. Based and would send a messenger to make that announcement and name the guy by name. Why it is that they use a mortar, Dafka, why not, for example, just bring a bench to there and let him stand on that? So different Rishonim and Achronim have various explanations. And if the Ritzvah says it symbolizes the idea, a mortar you use to grind up grain for food. So therefore, it symbolizes the idea that his parnasa ought to be turned over. If he's not supporting his children anyway, what does he need parnasa for? So therefore, it should be turned over and he shouldn't have the ability for it anymore. The Maharal talks about that the chlal represents the idea, like he's acting backwards, so therefore we use a backwards, upside-down keli for him to stand on. Ben Yehoyada points out that also the mortar can symbolize his wife. The wife is a keli to the husband, like the way the mortar is a keli for what you put it in and grind up. And therefore it symbolizes, like we're saying, in effect, what does such a person even need to have children for with his wife? He may as well not be married, or his wife may as well refuse him tashmish if he's anyway not even going to take care of his children. So you do that. So the Gemara asks, "Over boy bar now, you're telling me that the raven takes care of her children? But Haksiv, we have the pasuk in Tillim, say in davening, Livnei Odev Asher Yikro, that Hashem looks out for the children of the raven when they cry out. The implication being that the parents abandon them and they cry out to Hashem, and Hashem provides for them. And in fact, there's a medrash that says how Hashem does that. He causes that from their own waste, from their own dung, worms grow in it, as they tend to do, in decaying things. And then the babies are able to eat those worms. So the point is that the Erev is cruel to its children and abandons them. And there are other places in Shas, in fact, where the raven is taka used as a metaphor for someone who abandons their children. So the answer is, loikasha haba chivri haba uchri. It depends whether we're talking about black or white ones. So Rashi says black and white means different stages of the growth of the babies. They start out white, and at that point, the parent ravens, who themselves are black, they figure these aren't our children or whatever, or they ignore them. Eventually, the children themselves grow black feathers, then at that point, the parents start taking care of them themselves. Before that, Hashem takes care of them directly through these worms, like we're saying, and after that, the parents come and do it. Tosfos says, rather, we're talking about two different species of ravens. There are black ravens, and then there's a subspecies of raven that's white. So the black ones are the ones that ignore their children, and the white ones are the ones that our Gemara is saying do take care of their children. Another example, Kiava Osila Kameda Rava, when such a case came to Rava, a man who doesn't want to support his children when they're past the age of six, Omale, then Rava also wouldn't force him, but he would tell him, Michalach de Mitzini Banecha Mitzdaka, do you want your children to be supported out of Tzedaka? And maybe that would shame the guy into saying, no, I'll support them. But the Gemara points out, V'lay Amoran Elo D'lay Omid. Now this, that we don't force the father to support them, is only if he's not rich. The word Omid literally means, in the Lashon Oymed, which means estimate, if we don't estimate that he has the kind of money that he could support them in style. Abel Omid, but if he is rich, Kafin and Layal Korche, then we're koy for him, whether he likes it or not, because if nothing else, he has mitzvah tzedakah. And since tzedakah is first to your closer relatives, then therefore he has that responsibility. He heard the Rava Kafia, the Rav Nosson Ba'ami, as we have an example where one time Rava pressured Rav Nosson Ba'ami, Ba'apik when he dalled Meir Zuzi with tzedakah, and he extracted from him 400 Zuz for tzedakah. This wasn't to take care of Rav Ami's own children. This was just for Rav Nosson Ba'ami, rather. This was just for the general tzedakah fund of the city. But still, since Rav Nosson Ba'ami was rich, then, and Rava knew he could afford it, then he pressured him into it. Tosfos points out, by the way, the Gemara elsewhere says that when you have a mitzvah where it says the schar of it right there in the pasuk, then you don't force a person. Here we have the mitzvah of tzedakah is in this week's parasha in Parsha A, and the Torah tells us in the schar of the mitzvah of tzedakah that Hashem will bless you. So therefore, a person doesn't force a person to do that, because in effect, the person can say, you know what, so I won't do the mitzvah and I won't get the bracha. What do you want from me? So Tosfos gives a few different explanations over here. Number one, Akfe doesn't necessarily mean that he forced him, as in like he beat him or whatever. It could be that he convinced him verbally. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is they may have decided in the city that they assessed each person for how much tzedakah they're going to give. They know the tzedakah fund needs X number of dollars per week, and they figured out how much each person has to give, and therefore they have the ability to even force the people to pay up their share. The third possibility, Tosfos says, is that by tzedakah, it's not only a mitzvah saseh, you also have the loisah says, also in this week's parasha. Loisah amit, you shouldn't be stubborn. Loisik boits, don't close your hand against the ani. So therefore, that could be the kind of thing that Rava, as the head of the Beis Din, could even force Rav Nosson Ba'ami to do it. Marsha, by the way, talks about over here, there seem to be different levels within this itself. What we were saying, telling the guy that he's worse than a raven and that he's worse than a tanim and whatever, is like a higher level of kriya. Then you can have what Rava did to this guy who didn't want to support his children, which is even a lower level of kriya. You're not even putting public social pressure on him. You're just telling him privately, one-on-one, you know, it's not right that you should leave your children to be supported by tzedakah. So you have different levels. By the way, it does... So these halachas are brought in Shulchan Aruch. One thing it does mention, though, the Bach says, and the Beis Shmuel brings it, la'alacha, if the children have their own independent income, let's say, for example, their mother left them money or whatever, then we don't force the father to support them. Then you know, they have what to be supported out of, so then we don't force them, we don't even pressure him, we don't use any of these tactics. Over here, we say they can just be supported out of what was left, out of the money that was left for them.
That wouldn't be long-term.
No, so not necessarily. You could have, for example, let's say she yaushin from her parents or whatever. You could have cases where she had independent income. You could even have, for example, let's say where she was divorced from her husband and then later on died and her children yaushined her. Whatever the case, you can have examples where they have money independent of him and then. Okay. So the Gemara says, since we're talking about a takana that was made in Ushra that Rabbi Ila mentioned, so now the Gemara is going to mention some other takanas that Rabbi Ila says were made in Ushra. Amr of Ila Amr Shlokish, but Usha Hiskinu, they made a takona in Usha, a kosev called the Nechos of Levonov. If a person during his lifetime writes a document that gives all of his Nechosim to his children, so in other words, he's saying, I'm not going to wait until I die, even while I'm alive, I'm writing a document that gives all of my Nechosim to them. Nevertheless, Uva Ishta Nizonim Behem, he and his wife can continue to be supported by that. This is a takona Sacham. He asks, why do you even need a takana for that? G'dola mizu amru. The Chachamim said something even greater than that. You have a case. You can have a case. Suppose that a man dies, he leaves behind an almana, and he leaves a daughter. Now, the daughter, let's say, so he had no son, so the daughter yaushins his property. Now, what happens if that daughter gets married? So now, as usual, the property that she brings into the marriage becomes her chosin, nichsim alogu, nichsitzoin bazel, as the case may be. Usually, the rule is that midrabanon, the husband's position, as far as those nichosin, is like the position of a buyer. Now, usually, we consider as if he bought that property. Now, usually the rule is that we have a takana, mitnei tikkuna olam, that if a person sells property, you can't collect from it to support his widow or support his daughters. When we're saying that there's tanoi ksuba, that his widow is to be supported until she passes away or collects her ksuba or remarries, and the daughters are to be supported until they're begeris or until they get married, then if he previously sold property to other people, you can't take that property away from those people to satisfy that debt. They took an oil because otherwise nobody's going to ever want to buy property from each other. Here we're saying that even though the husband is considered a lakeach, nevertheless, it can be taken away from him as necessary to support the widow or to support the widow. Because Rashi points out, he's not really a lekeach after all. He didn't spend money to get this property. It came as part of the wedding, as part of the nadin. Therefore, we can still require him to support his mother-in-law. So even then, we're saying that you can be supported. So in our case over here, where the guy voluntarily wrote away his nechassim to his children, do we need to say that he and his wife can be supported? Of course they could. And we know the Shalach Ravin Beikotei, as we know that Ravin sent a message in a letter that Misha Mesvi Niach Amono Bas, the man died and left an Amona and a daughter, and the daughter inherited his property, and later on she got married. So to begin with, before she gets married, Amonos and Nizonis Minachasad, the Amona gets supported out of the estate. And Nises Abbas, and even when the daughter gets married, Amonos and Nizonis Minachasav, still the Amona continues to be supported, because we're saying even though the husband is a Lekeach, we still override his rights in favor of the Amona. We don't say that regular Takana that we don't take from a third party, we take Tikkun Olam, that doesn't apply over here, because as Rashi says, he didn't actually buy the property. And the Braisa continues, Mesa Abbas, or not the Braisa, Robin continues and says, Mesa Abbas, what about if the daughter dies and her husband yashins her? So, Omer of Yehuda ben Achoisesh or Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, Al Yodi Hayamaisa, so Rabbi Yehuda, the nephew of Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, says, such a case happened with me. But Omru and the Chachamim said, Amonasin is Zonis Menachasim. Still, the Amona continues to be supported out of his Menachasim. You don't say at this point he has no relation at all. The only reason why he was in the picture of Bechlal was because he was married to the daughter, and now the daughter, his wife, is dead, and therefore we should say he's considered like a third party Lekeach, and we shouldn't take away from him. No, we still take away from him to support the Amon.
Same reason,
right. But the point is it applies even after his wife dies, right. So why would you need to konas Osha to say that in the case where it's not even a matter of Yerusha, it's a matter of that he voluntarily gave away all of his nechassim, that he and his wife should continue to be able to support it from them? What's the chiddush? And the answer is, Mao de Tema, without Rabbi Ila telling us about the Sakonas Osha, you would have thought, because the difference is over there, in the case of the Amona, there's nobody who's able to work on her behalf. She's an Amona, she doesn't have a husband, so we have Rachmanos on her, and we say, we have Rachmanos on her, and say she can continue to collect from the estate even after it was Yashin by her son-in-law. Abel Hoffa, but over here, when you're talking about himself and his wife, the old couple, where he gave away his property, Nitzrach Lididei or Lidida, so fine, let him go to work and support himself and his wife. Kamash Malan, and therefore the Takonas Usha tells us not so, that he's still entitled to support out of that estate, because we assume that when he gave it away, he didn't mean to give it away so much that he and his wife can't be supported. Okay, so now the question is, again, the question is, Rabbi Ila is saying that this takana was made in Usha. Is the halacha like that or not? Does he have that right or not? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we can prove from the following story. One time Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yonasan were standing together. Osahu Gavra, a certain person came over, Gochin, and he bent over and he kissed Rabbi Yonasan's feet. So, like, obviously, Rabbi Yonasan had done some tremendous favor for him. Omalei Rabbi Chanina, my high. So, Chanina says, what'd you do for this guy? Omalei, so he says, high kosev nechosev levonahu. This guy was in this situation. He had written a document giving all of his nechosim to his sons. Va'asi sinu lezonei. And I was kofer them. I forced them to support him. So Rashi says b'chazka means strongly. Tosfos again says that maybe it doesn't mean that he actually forced them with the power based in. It just means that he verbally convinced them. Anyway, so the Gemara says, so obviously, so e amit b'shlema labdina, if you say that the halacha is not like Rabbi Ila, that this is not a takana susha, it was never voted on, or the chachamim thought about, or whatever the point is, mishumachi asiyinu, then that would explain why Rabbi Chanina still, why Rabbi Yonasan pressured them into doing it, and therefore this guy is so grateful that I went for him lefnim mishuras hadin. Eli amit dina. But if you say that it's mitzad din that they're required to support him, asiyinu boy, would he need to be ma'asa then? What he should be doing is he should be telling them, listen, this is halacha, you better follow it, whether you like it or not, and if not, then the hammer will come down on you. So the fact that he doesn't do that, the fact that he only says that he only did it behind the scenes shows, therefore, that the halacha is not like that. The halacha is technically, it all belongs to the children. And if they want to support him, it's out of the goodness of their heart. So therefore, what Rabbi Yonasan did in this case is he convinced them to do that, to continue supporting their father, to continue supporting their parents, even though they're not strictly required to up the halacha. So showing, in other words, the halacha is not like this takana usha. And we'll continue tomorrow in the Gemara Bas Hashem with talking about other takanas of usha, including one very famous one as far as tzedakah. Yeah.